Football Weekly is on the air.
6 seconds to go. They drop three deep. Does Green Bay. Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nick makes the pass for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary on the final play of the half.
Brady brings him out again. He's got two tight ends in there. Hand off to no one. Play action fake by Brady. Looking long down the left sideline. It is caught. Deion Branch. Five. In zone. Touchdown. My, oh, my. A 61-yard touchdown pass play. Tom Brady to Deion Branch for the touchdown.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Coming up, we preview the conference championship games.
What's really up with the head coaching searches in Tampa, in Oakland, in Indianapolis? And is Des Bryant in trouble again?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larrabee. Welcome to Pro Football Weekly, championship week in the NFL, down to the final four. Ravens and Patriots in the AFC, Giants and 49ers in the NFC, gunning for the Super Bowl. More on those games coming up, obviously, later on. We begin with the way we hear it with associate editor Kevin Fishbane. Kevin, the news just keeps on coming from Gotham, the New York Jets locker room. I mean, it's been closed for a couple of weeks, and the stories just keep pouring out. LaDainian Tomlinson talks some more about a broken locker room on Showtime this week, and there's also news that he may be retired. Give us the update on that.
Yeah, with LT, he's the veteran. He comes into this Jets locker room, and he just saw the entire thing break down around him. And I wonder if he even wants to come back for another year with the Jets and have to deal with the Santonio Holmes, the Mark Sanchez, the Rex Ryan, all that. He went ahead and said that he doesn't like when Rex Ryan predicts, you know, going to the Super Bowl. He talked about how the Holmes and Sanchez drama began in week three or week four. You know, he went on and on just about how it was one of the worst locker rooms he's ever been in.
Well, it's interesting. I think I'm the one who just kind of added, I guess he retired. Maybe he didn't retire, but he certainly retired as a New York Jet with these comments, because it's hard to imagine. And you're talking about a Hall of Famer. We all know that. But I think he said what we've all expected and maybe even thought we knew. But it's hard for me to imagine the Jets even considering putting him back into that locker room next year, no matter how it changes.
It's one of those things where you got to wonder what Rex Ryan wants to do with this, you know, ongoing thing where he allows guys to talk. I mean, they've always been this talking team, and that's where this happens. These guys are so free to say whatever they want because they take after Rex, they take after Tannenbaum, they decide to, and then when everything breaks down, they all go to the media. They're all anonymous sources in these stories, and LT talked about that, and you know how the guys just felt comfortable once everything broke down, then they decided to get out of there and tell everybody about it. And you know, the thing is, I imagine that LT is a guy that gets a lot of respect in the locker room, but after this, because he went out and, you know, put his face on it and put his name on it, as opposed to some of the anonymous sources we saw last week. So I got to imagine that some of the guys might not like that back in the locker room. Although he goes, if I'm back in there, I'd probably sit down with Santonio and Mark Sanchez and try to work things out. So he does kind of put that positive spin on it.
But you know, I'm sorry, Wayne, but you know what's interesting, Kevin, is Rex Ryan can't change this unless Rex Ryan changes 100%. I mean, there's nothing he can do about it now.
Right, and Rex has said that he's not going to necessarily change. He said he might tone it down a little bit, but we know Rex, and we've seen this for years. I mean, that's just who he is. He's going to continue to do it. He's going to continue to be brash, and, you know, it's whether or not his players can, you know, stick together in the locker room.
And there's a lot of talk, obviously, that LaDainian Tomlinson may just retire. That could happen, and that's been the talk, but no word yet officially on that, correct?
Correct. He hasn't officially decided. The reports are kind of coming through. Obviously, his production continued to go down. His touches went down. But he could still find a place next year, find a niche somewhere on the team that needs a third down back. He still shows he has some legs left.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much for your work on that story on the Jets. Associate editor Eli Cabron is with us. Denver Broncos, John Elway said Team Tebow goes to camp as the number one quarterback on the roster. That doesn't mean they're going to try to bring in somebody who could beat him out, right?
Right, Wayne. I mean, they have to bring in somebody. Tebow is the only quarterback under contract next season for the Broncos. So he's the number one quarterback next season because there's no one else there. He's the lead guy by default. But we hear that the Broncos are definitely considering bringing in another quarterback, either through the draft or free agency, that can compete with Tebow in camp. So Tebow's the number one guy for now, but that doesn't necessarily mean that week one, when the season begins, that he'll be under center.
Well, and it's really interesting. If you look at the choice of words, Eli, it's almost the opposite of an endorsement because, you know, he could have said, he's our guy. We expect better things from him next year. You know, we're looking for a backup. Said none of those things, just gave you the obvious, which right now is the only quarterback on the roster. I guess that makes him the starter.
Right. And the way that John Elway said it was that he's earned the right to be the number one guy in training camp, which, like you said, Hub, it doesn't really mean anything. 8 months away, he's earned the right to be at the top of the list, but that could change within one or two practices, for all we know, when they bring in another quarterback. So right now, Tebow's the guy, and he'll actually have a full offseason with John Fox and OTAs and camp, and he'll be able to improve. But this does not show any sign of the future of what's to come for the Denver Broncos.
Thanks very much, Eli. Associate Editor Dan Parr, your beat, the New Orleans Saints. They've got a lot of people to sign. I didn't realize they had as many people going to free agency as they do, and they've got some salary cap problems as a result, don't they?
Well, they could, Wayne. The goal for them, the ideal situation, would be to get a long-term deal done with Drew Brees before the deadline to use the franchise tag. Then you'd be able to maybe use that on Carl Nix, Marcus Colston, a couple of key offensive players for them that are going to be looking for, that they did hit the open market, would be candidates for some really nice deals for themselves. And then on the other side of the ball, there's guys like Sean Rogers of Brave Franklin, their top two nose tackles, to go along with Tracy Porter, a starting corner. So they have some guys that are going to need to be paid, and they will not be cheap to keep around.
Well, and you know, unless they got a ton of room under the cap right now, Dan, and when you talk about a Breeze contract, you can only make that so cap-friendly. I would think that at least of the four guys, Porter on defense, Colston, Nix, and Breeze, losing any one of them would be a significant loss to this football team.
Nix is probably the best guard in the league right now, and that's the guy that people really have a hard time seeing how he comes back unless you're able to put the tag on him. Breeze has been talking with the Saints now for more than a year about this long-term deal. They haven't been able to work anything out. They eventually said late in the season, you know, we're going to put this off, stop talking about it, and resume once we get to the offseason. Well, we're here now. Drew Brees believes that he should be paid on par with guys like Peyton Manning and Michael Vick, other guys who've been paid, and Tom Brady, the guys who've been paid in the past year or two that are the highest paid players at the position. So they have some real tough decisions to make, and managing the cap situation is going to be more difficult than ever for a general manager who's done a pretty good job of it in Mickey Loomis.
All right, thanks very much, Dan. Back with more Away We Hear It when this Championship Week edition of Pro Football Weekly continues. Listening to Pro Football Weekly. It is championship weekend in the NFL, and the way we hear it features the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the PFW staff. And associate editor Arthur Arkush joins us. The Texans' biggest offseason question, can they bring back Mario Williams? What's the story there, Arthur?
Well, the story is that obviously Williams is an unrestricted free agent and remains the Texans' best defensive player. I think that there's no question as far as just physical skills, and he's just incredibly gifted. But, of course, he missed a good chunk of the season with that pectoral injury. So what we're hearing is that bringing him back, re-signing him, is going to be the top off-season priority. But it's going to be a challenge. The franchise tag we're hearing is really not an option. It's going to be north of $20 million, and there's just no way the Texans can afford to do that. Texans are actually over $20 million over the cap as it stands now, so there's going to be some serious cost-cutting moves made if they're going to have any chance of bringing back Williams. So we hear that he wants to be back. Despite, you know, being on IR, he was with the team every day and was at all the games and, was essentially a very expensive cheerleader. And we hear that Wade Phillips definitely wants to have him back. He's already kind of drooling over the prospect of having Williams, Barwin, and the rookie Brooks Reed all on the field at once, ratcheting up the pressure. So the challenge is, can they make both sides happy and can they get a deal done?
Well, you know, Arthur, it's always interesting to me when you hear about some of these teams that have salary cap issues and others somehow get everybody they want. You look at that Texans roster and you ask yourself, how could they be $20 million over the cap? You know, Andre Johnson's getting paid. The rest of these guys are all young. Jonathan Joseph got a big contract last year, but Arian Foster hasn't been paid. Mario Williams hasn't been paid. Cushing, Barwin, Watt, Reed, these guys are all on their rookie deals. Where'd they spend all the money?
You know, it's a good question. I think there are some other guys that gave Owen Daniels a bunch of money a few years ago. Matt Schaub got a big contract, but he's actually going to be up again after next season. So, you know, it's a reasonable question. It makes you wonder how they got to where they are now. But as I mentioned, there's a lot of guys that are going to be free after next year, too, are going to be unrestricted free agents, like a Dwayne Brown, who was their best blocker this year, Connor Barwin, who obviously had a breakout season, and Schaub's contract's going to be up again. So they got to be looking down the road as well.
Let's go to another one of your teams. The Indianapolis Colts continue to make a lot of noise. First off, the head coaching search is ongoing, and then you've got the prospect of possibly having Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck on the same roster. Is that still a possibility?
Yeah, I think it is. When Jim Caldwell was fired, a lot of people said, you know, oh, this is the next step in the process of cleaning house completely, which would include Peyton Manning. But that's not what we're hearing. I think it still remains that if he's healthy, he's going to be back. I think more than anything, you know, Jim Irsay wants him to finish his career cold. I think Peyton Manning wants to finish his career a member of the Colts, and I don't think there's any way that they would let him go without compensation. As we all know, a trade isn't going to be a possibility. So if he's healthy, it still sounds like the best option is going to be to bring him back and have him starting and having Luck in a pretty unique situation to learn under a future Hall of Famer.
You know, Arthur, let's talk about what's really going on here. It's kind of a unique season in the NFL with at least four new general managers. We're used to a lot of coaching changes. You don't see this many GM changes all at once. Now, on everybody's list, as far as insiders and experts, you would have found the names Reggie McKenzie and Ryan Grigson. There's no question that Grigson was one of the top prospects. But a big part of his job beyond rebuilding his football team is going to be kind of holding the hand and monitoring and babysitting his owner a little bit, who had a Twitter breakout about a year or two ago and is clearly involved in all these decisions. And Jim Irsay fancies himself a football guy. He was the GM of this team at one point, and he has said without question that if Peyton Manning passes the physical, I paid him $26 million not to play. I'm certainly going to pay him $28 million to play.
Yeah, you hit it on the head, and, you know, we heard Grigson certainly had a big say in the Caldwell firing, but when it comes to Peyton Manning, that decision is going to rest with Jim Irsay, and it's a unique position to be in. I mean, he's got a number of important, you know, decisions he's, looking towards with free agents and how to get this roster back to, you know, competitive status, but, in terms of the Peyton Manning decision, which of course is number one at this point from a financial standpoint as well as just the long-term, outlook of the team, it doesn't sound like Grigson's gonna have a ton of say in that.
Arthur, thanks very much for your work on those stories. Senior editor Eric Edholm is with us in studio. Dallas Cowboys, that's another news-making operation down there. The NFL Network reporting Monday that Cowboys wide receiver Dez Bryant was not arrested and will not have charges filed against him following an incident Sunday night at a Miami nightclub. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, the details are still a little bit sketchy on this. Reportedly, Lil Wayne was involved, and perhaps...
Lil Wayne.
Wayne. Sorry,
okay.
I'm still learning the lingo and the names here. But, yeah, I mean, it just shows, obviously, you know, a Cowboys official told me last year, you know, heading into the lockout, they said, the offseason is the scariest time for Dez Bryant. We don't know, you know, I mean, he disappears, he shows up for the training camp and the mini camps and all that stuff, but... You know, they can't keep tabs on this guy all the time, and this is just another incident. Although he wasn't arrested, the Cowboys say, you know, the fact that he's getting in these altercations makes you wonder whether he'll ever kind of grow up and get the big picture here.
Well, he's not dumb. I mean, if I'm going to pick a fight, I'm going to find a little guy named Lil. There's no question about that. But listen, Eric, the untold story on this kid, I'm told by people down in Dallas that he's actually a good kid.
Yep.
His background, and we hear stories about kids who come from tough upbringings, but apparently Dez Bryant's story, his childhood, his lack of parenting, the neighborhood, the whole thing, this kid is trying to overcome more than any five of us should have to do combined.
Yeah, and I think there's a ton of stuff right there, and Deion Sanders has tried to mentor him, but there's a lot going on, and it's going to take a while before we figure out if he's going to get on the same page.
All right, Eric, stay with us. We'll have you for one more segment. Coming up, more news and notes from around the NFL when we return on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly, and we continue with the way we hear it on this championship weekend and resume with senior editor Eric Edholm. Eric, one of your teams, the Minnesota Vikings, there's a lot simmering there in terms of assistant coaches. They offered the job earlier this week of defensive coordinator to Alan Williams. Now, that doesn't mean Fred Puggage is out of work, but he's clearly been demoted. Give us the latest on Alan Williams.
Yeah, it sounds like the reports on Thursday were that he accepted the job. I mean, he's a defensive back coach. He's been in Indy for the last 10 years. He and Leslie Frazier, the Vikings head coach, have worked together. And so this, to me, clearly shows that they're going to stick with the Tampa 2 defense. There have been rumblings that they would, you know, consider an attacking style 3-4, a vast difference from what they've done in the past several years. So it sounds like Frazier's desperately trying to hang on to this Tampa 2 thing. He thinks he has the personnel to run it. And you mentioned Pugich. I mean, he's still going to stay on as the linebacker coach, it appears. And I think Mike Singletary is going to remain on this staff, too. A lot of people were unhappy with his performance this season. The linebackers didn't play well. Questions about Singletary's commitment to the team. So it sounds like they'll both coach the linebackers and that maybe Singletary will be some sort of consigliere. I don't know what the position title would be, but sort of a right-hand man to Frazier.
You know, Eric, I hate to do this because Les is one of the nicest guys I've met in all my years of doing this, but it's a question that begs asking. So you've got a not fired but demoted defensive coordinator.
Yep.
You've got a not fired but demoted former head coach, assistant to the head coach. They're going to both coach linebackers, and now you got a new guy coming in to be your defensive coordinator. Is the epitaph on Les Frazier's coaching career likely to be he was just too nice a guy?
You hope not. Obviously, you root for guys who do treat people well like Leslie Frazier does. And he's a good football coach. I think everybody knows that he has the ability to be a very strong coach in this league. But given the Vikings situation and all their problems and the fact that Frazier only occasionally showed some fire with a couple losses, the Atlanta loss comes to mind, where he really was fired up. But you know, you wonder whether he can turn this thing around with a rookie quarterback that regressed and Adrian Peterson coming off ACL surgery, the defensive mess, so many personnel questions sitting out there. I just don't know. It's going to be a real tough challenge this season to be better than 3-13, which they were this year.
Eric, the Eagles situation, their staff always seems to be hot when coaching openings occur around the league and people look to Andy Reid's staff. Marty Mornenwick, interviewed for the Raiders job. What's his story? What's his situation? Is he also in the running for the Colts job?
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Grigson was in the Eagles personnel department. He got the Colts GM job, so the word we're hearing is that he is a candidate. May not be tops on their list, but he's somebody I think they eventually will bring in. But I think he's got probably a better shot to land the job out in Oakland. You know, Marty's a West Coast guy. He spent a number of years with the 49ers. I think that's a job he would be very much interested in. He fits with the team out there. I think they want to develop Terrell Pryor, and he might be able to keep Carson and Palmer afloat. So it's a possibility. And if Marty were to leave, I think Brad Childress would be interested in coming back. They're both represented by Bob Lamont. He's very close with Andy Reid as well, obviously. I think they'd try to, you know, finagle a two-for-one kind of deal. And Childress obviously wants to get back in the league. His name is out there a little bit now, and it would be an interesting kind of swap.
What about Steve Spagnuolo? He's been offered this. Yeah. I don't know if he's – I shouldn't say he's been offered. He's rumored to be a serious candidate for the Saints job. His name could come into play when the Colts – his name is going to pop up everywhere.
Yep.
And yet some people aren't even sure he's going to coach this year. And Philadelphia, we all assumed, was the most likely landing spot.
Yeah, and there were some hard feelings from people I talked to when Spags left because he'd been denied an interview the year before, and that's why he took the Giants job. He supposedly was going to be Jim Johnson's replacement, but Jim still had a couple years coaching left in him. So it's not a done deal that he's going to return to Philadelphia. Could it happen? Absolutely. I think they'd want it to happen. And that's why Andy Reid has not really spoken since the end of the season. He's delaying it. He wants to wait until there's a decision on Spagnuolo.
All right, Cullen Jenkins, defensive end, went from the world champion Packers to the Philadelphia Eagles, was missed in Green Bay, added 5.5 sacks in Philadelphia this year. He's owed $5 million now coming up later this offseason. Will the Eagles pay up?
I think they will, Wayne, and it's interesting. I mean, he played very well, but he did an interview in Milwaukee this past week where he kind of hinted like he missed Green Bay and that, you know, he just sort of skirted the line a little bit, and I think that he probably missed him just as much as the Packers missed Jenkins. So, I mean, it's something worth watching. I do think he was a good enough player this past season. He dominated at times that the Eagles will think about very hard about bringing him back.
Wayne, let's hand it off to senior editor Mike Wilkening. And Wilkie, this is a developing story as we talk late in the week, but it's being reported in Pittsburgh and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, I believe, that offensive coordinator Bruce Arians will not be back with the Steelers.
Yeah, it might not be back up. I mean, it depends. There's still, I think, a lot of moving pieces here, but there could be a change there, according to the Post-Gazette. Either Arians leaving on his own accord or not coming back. It's unclear at this point. And again, there's a possibility he could be back. But that there's a little bit of uncertainty there, I think, is notable because this is an offense that obviously is a very pass-first attack. Bruce Arians very close with Ben Roethlisberger. If there were a change there, it would come down to, again, Who's the replacement, and what's the philosophy of this offense?
Mike, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next week. Coming up, we've got the Road Warriors in the NFC and AFC Championship games profiled next on Pro Football Weekly. Along with the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, I'm Wayne Larrabee. One fun fact from PFW this week. You know, since 1970, NFL-AFL merger, the home teams are 55-27. They win 67% of the time in the conference championship games, but just 50% last year. They split with the Steelers winning at home in Pittsburgh, the Bears losing in Chicago in the championship game a year ago. New England and San Francisco own home field advantage this year. The road teams in this year's championship games bring a common thread: tough defenses and tournament experience. The AFC North Division champions, second-seeded Baltimore Ravens, head into Foxborough this weekend where they take on the top-seeded New England Patriots. For a look at the Ravens in this game, we check in with Craig Heist.
Well, the week for the Ravens started out with head coach John Harbaugh and his players having to defend quarterback Joe Flacco in the media. After safety Ed Reed on a national radio show said Flacco looked a bit rattled at times last week during their playoff win over the Texans, Harbaugh, along with Ray Lewis and Terrell Suggs, insisted there's nothing to worry about from a morale standpoint going forward as they get set to face the Patriots. As for Flacco,
it was a little funny to me, a little caught off guard, but it is what it is. We talked about it. It's not really that big of a deal.
That behind them, it's up to the Ravens to try and stop that high-powered, prolific passing attack of Tom Brady and the Patriots. They averaged 428 yards a game, 32.1 points a game, and Brady threw for 5,235 yards and 39 touchdowns. And Ray Lewis knows.
We got our hands full this week. You watched what they did last week against Denver. You know, just the way they came out and ran their offense, how efficient he was, how many receivers. I mean, different receivers he hit with the ball. So I think their offense, period, playing at a very high level.
As for the Ravens, everything they do offensively runs through running back Ray Rice. He had just over 2,000 yards from scrimmage this year, the best in the NFL, and he knows how big it'll be for the Ravens' offense to stay on the field and keep Brady off of it.
In order to keep Tom Brady up the field, I'm going to just say we have to simply execute at a high level. We have to play championship football. And championship football, it doesn't matter how you win it. You know, you just have to execute effectively. I know I'll be a major part in this game plan.
The Ravens beat the Patriots 2 years ago in the wild card round in Foxborough, 33-14. Brady was sacked three times and threw three interceptions as the Ravens got up 24-0 and never looked back. But the two teams are different now, and the Ravens know they have to make it a Ravens-type game, create turnovers with their defense, and slow down Brady and his receivers. For Terrell Suggs,
you don't want particularly this guy to get in a 7-on-7 matchup with your defensive backs. You don't want them back there just be like, oh, we just don't play catch today.
We shall see Sunday at 3. Craig Heist for Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, Joe Flacco can blow off Ed Reed's comments all he wants and probably should, and I don't want to make a big deal out of this, but the reality of it is, it tells you the story of what's going on inside that Raven locker room. The defense feels like they're a Super Bowl defense, and as much as the media and the fans go after him, even some of the defensive players feel that the Ravens offense, and particularly their quarterback, may not be playing at a Super Bowl level. Now, Ed Reed has been known to throw stuff out there. It would be a little more concerning if it came from a Ray Lewis or a Holodinata, but nonetheless, don't think it'll be the difference in the game, but it certainly is a distraction that John Harbaugh and Joe Flacco wish they didn't have.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing about it is, Hub, to take the heat off of Flacco, Ray Rice is going to have a big game, and he has had big games against the Patriots, averaging 145 yards, rushing and receiving combined in three career matchups with New England. The NFC East Division New York Giants were the last team to qualify for the postseason. As they did 4 years ago, they're making the most of their late entry. Bart Pasterna has more.
It's been around a decade since the Giants and Niners have met in the playoffs, but it's only been a shade over 2 months since the NFC Championship combatants collided in the regular season at Candlestick. New York coach Tom Coughlin says, just as you wouldn't dwell on ancient NFL history, one shouldn't reflect too deeply on that mid-November Big Blue loss.
We rushed the ball, I think, 29 times out there when we were out there. We did win the time of possession. We had 70 snaps to their 52, which are all things you would want to do. We just didn't score enough points.
That defeat, however, was the start of a four-game slide for the Giants, a losing streak that put the heat on to finish with a flourish, a swoon that forced some players like wide receiver Hakeem Nicks to get a little introspective and correct issues that were contributing to the team's free fall.
We studied ourselves. You know, from a receiver standpoint, it was a lot of tip balls, not looking the ball all the way in, making moves before you catch the ball, I'm not tucking the ball after you catch it.
Just making the play from the routine to the spectacular. And to that end, New York has delivered. Knicks in particular has become a 1,000-yard receiver with bite, becoming lead dog of the Giants' talented receiving troika in the playoffs. It helps that the running game's coming around a bit. It helps even more that the offense is seeing lots of field time thanks to a now healthy defense that has frustrated both the Falcons and defending NFL champion Packers during this postseason. Pro Bowl quarterback Eli Manning has taken advantage of extra TikToks on the clock, but now he'll be facing a less generous foe in Frisco, especially the Niners' unforgiving linebacking crew.
That's about as good as they get. I don't know if there's a better core in the NFL with their 3-4 scheme and Patrick Willis and Bowman and their outside backers, so they're talented, and their front seven is as good as you can face in the NFL.
On the other side of the ball, the Giants' deal see a healthy Frank Gore running the pigskin this time around, yet the 49ers' greatest receiving threat remains Vernon Davis. While the tight end is beyond top shelf, the supporting pass-catching cast is disappointing. This could lead to New York making San Fran one-dimensional, which might mean more scampering from QB Alex Smith. And such conjecturing causes Giants safety Antrell Roll to remark,
"You know, we're going to rally to it. We're going to rally to it, and, you know, I can promise you one thing. He won't run the ball too much."
Ah, promises to keep, four quarters to go to see if talk is cheap. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Bart Pasterna.
All right, thanks very much, Bart. Coming up, the home teams on this championship weekend. You are listening to a postseason edition of Pro Football Weekly. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, along with Hub Arkish, I'm Wayne Larrabee. The AFC title game, a classic, great defense against great offense matchup. The defensive-minded Baltimore Ravens pay a visit to the offensive-minded New England Patriots. Mike Petralia has the story of the AFC's top-seeded Patriots.
The Patriots are playing in their sixth AFC championship game since their Super Bowl run with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick began in 2001. This time around, Belichick is preparing his team for a 13-4 Ravens squad led by star linebackers Ray Lewis and Terrell Suggs, and of course all-world safety Ed Reed. It was Reed who made a pair of game-saving plays last weekend in a win over the Texans, something that definitely caught the eye of Bill Belichick.
Those are the kind of plays he makes. You know, he probably covers more field back there as a single safety than most teams can cover with two. He's got great instincts. He's a tremendous player, Ray Lewis. You know, everything that he brings to the game, his playmaking ability, his leadership, his experience, his ability to get the people around him to play better, both by his communication and anticipation and just, you know, leadership and football savvy on the field. I mean, those two guys, you know, it'd be really hard to put anybody even in their class, let alone above them. They're tremendous players, have tremendous careers. Can't say I've ever coached against anybody better than Ed Reed in secondary.
Brady will also have his eyes on Reed on every play.
Yeah, you don't fool Ed too often. You know, every once in a while you see him out of place, but it's very rare. But yeah, you know, when you break the huddle, you find where he's at, and you make sure you're not, you know, lobbing the ball up into his zones, because, you know, as you saw in the Houston game, he's going to go up there and make the plays. He's just an exceptional player. I don't think there's really a weakness that he has. Coach Belichick has a meeting with all the quarterbacks. We did yesterday, and you talk about strengths and weak points of every player, and a guy like Ed and Ray Lewis, and there's no real weak points.
The Patriots are 4-1 in championship games under Belichick and Brady, having lost only in 2006 when they let a 21-6 halftime lead in Indianapolis slip away. With the Patriots in New England, I'm Mike Petralia, Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, you mentioned it a few minutes ago. The Ravens have had some success in the playoffs against the Patriots. As a matter of fact, 2 years ago in the first round, first play of the game, Ray Rice goes 83 yards, and they never looked back. They won 33-14, but the bottom line, these are two different teams. The Ravens have aged quite a bit since then, and the Patriots have actually gotten younger, other than, you know, obviously Tom Brady, who's the linchpin on the whole thing, and yet the formula is the same. I think for the Ravens to have any chance here, they're going to have to play on the lead. If they get 10 points, two scores behind, they're going to have a big problem.
I agree wholeheartedly with you, Hub, and I've never seen two tight ends quite like this on the same team. And what was interesting to me last week was to see Aaron Hernandez not just catch the ball, but run the ball out of the backfield. That, you talk about versatility. This is unheard of.
Well, and you know what it is? Bill O'Brien gets some credit. Of course, he's the OC who will be leaving to be the head coach at Penn State. This is Bill Belichick. You know, he is a defensive coordinator turned head coach, defensive guru, you know, surefire Hall of Famer. And yet it's Belichick who has been putting these wrinkles in the offense for the last 4, 5, 6 years now, you know, and he's the one who traded for Wes Welker from the Miami Dolphins, a little known undersized wide receiver who is shattering records at the position the last 3, 4 years now. It's Belichick who came up with the concept because he's his own personnel guy of having these two uncoverable tight ends. And then he moves Hernandez in the backfield, you can almost bet that he's going to have some new wrinkle for John Harbaugh on Sunday that he hasn't seen before.
Well, Hub, we've been wondering this entire season, really, does defense still win championships? So this is going to be an example of that because you've got New England second offensively in the league, 31st on defense, Baltimore third-ranked defense in the NFL. Defense wins championships. It'll be the Ravens in the Super Bowl. Coming up, the San Francisco 49ers and the Handicapper's Corner when Pro Football Weekly continues. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. The NFC Championship game, as we mentioned, brings together the Giants and the second-seeded San Francisco 49ers. John Dickerson previews the NFC West Division champion Niners as they enter the championship round.
The 49ers return to the NFC Championship game for the first time since 1997 and host the New York Giants for the second time in their history for a spot in the Super Bowl on the line. With the weather report calling for showers in the Bay, head coach Jim Harbaugh, have you paid much attention to the forecast?
Been looking at it, and chance of rain. It's worth following and looking at, and you know, there's possibility of rain tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So wouldn't mind getting some work in those kind of conditions if it does play out that way.
With San Francisco among the league leaders in defense, Harbaugh explains the confidence he has in coordinator Vic Fangio.
Vic runs the defense along with the other coaches. You know, I've always had great respect for him before we had a chance to work with him. I think he's one of the best defensive coordinators in the history of the NFL, and that's what I want his legacy to be, and he's doing a great job.
Justin Smith has been a leader of this team's defense, and Harbaugh talks about why Smith rises to the top.
Wicked fight. It's just, you know, when other people see it and feed off that and, you know, want to rise to that level. Whenever you have a leader like Justin Smith, when your best players, your hardest worker, your fiercest competitor, that bodes really well for your football team.
Coach Harbaugh has the ultimate respect for a Giants opponent that San Francisco faced and defeated in Week 10.
They were playing really good at that time, and they're playing really good now. I think they're a healthier team. You know, this is a Super Bowl contending team, and that's who they are, offensively, defensively. Special teams, class team that also, you know, is a cruel team. I mean, they don't give you things.
John Dickinson, Pro Football Weekly.
You know, you listen to Harbaugh, and he's being so careful, you know, and it's very un-Harbaugh-like, actually. Usually you expect Jim to be firing up the troops and saying something controversial and trying to take the pressure off his players, but I think he understands where he's at right now, one step short of the Super Bowl, and from a 49ers perspective, after knocking off the Saints, this is just more about playing good football against the Giants than any kind of mind games they're going to be playing with them.
You know, Hub, and as you take a look at all the numbers that go into the game, and people are going to say, well, the Giants, you know, they were only 25th in points allowed, 27th in total defense. They were minus 6 in point differential during the regular season. You know what? That's not who they are. You can't take a look at the entire regular season numbers and say this is who the Giants are, because they're not. They're not the 32nd ranked running team in the league right now. They've rushed for, what, 170-some yards against Atlanta, 92 yards against Green Bay last week. The Giants in their four-game winning streak, Hub, are plus 71 in point differential. This is a team, I think it's the best team left in the playoffs.
Well, you know, it's a mixed bag. I'm going to debate you a little bit, only because, yeah, they had 90-some yards against the Packers, but almost half of it was on a broken play by Ahmad Bradshaw at the end of the first half, and the Pack doesn't stop the run very well. I agree with you that it's more about who's playing good football right now, but let's not forget, in recent weeks, I mean, the 49ers very impressive over the Pittsburgh Steelers and then knocking off the Saints last week, and as much as it's about how they're playing today, there's one matchup here that fascinates me. Everybody says, well, you know, Alex Smith, the 49ers passing game. San Francisco 49ers were 29th in the NFL this year throwing the football, 20th in average gain per pass play. The New York Giants' pass defense was 29th against the pass and 20th in average game per pass play allowed. So if there's a matchup that could dictate the outcome of this ballgame, I think that's where it's going to come.
And one other note, Hub, just an observation. San Francisco's the best tackling defense I've seen all year. Mm-hmm. They really are. They're very solid in that fundamental aspect of the game. Giants and Niners, NFC title game Sunday evening in San Francisco. Time now for the Handicapper's Corner, featuring our handicapper from the Phoenician in Las Vegas, Chuck Esposito.
And Chuck, welcome in. My understanding, I'm not an expert on this, but I believe a little bit of excitement for you guys last Sunday night. I was told that in some places this NFC game opened as a pick and quickly moved to 1.5 and 2.5 as the 49er favorite. What did happen there?
The 49ers did open up as a very small favorite, but that number has been trending up. And it looks like, which is a little surprising, it looks like it might get as high as a field goal. Early action has been really on the 49ers. It's been pretty much one-sided since we posted that game.
You know, and I guess it's because the fans have a hard time buying into the momentum aspect to who's hot now. It's more about the public perception of these teams. And so you look at the other ball game, I think that one's been pretty static between 7 and 8, 7, 7.5. And yet you always have this problem with the Patriots, I'm guessing, which is how high do you make the number to keep the action balanced?
No, very, very true. And I think you look at the offensive-minded teams. You look at the Packers. You look at the Saints, who have been knocked out. Yet you have these defensive teams, Baltimore, the Giants, who can still play some defense, and the 49ers. And those are the teams that have survived. So what do you look at the Patriots when it's over a touchdown? Is there some value there with Baltimore where maybe they can stay within that number? I think the public's looking at that, and that's why that number has come down a little bit.
Chuck Esposito from the Phoenician in Las Vegas. Stay tuned. Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor, Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
You know, Wayne, it's kind of been fun over the last 5-6 weeks. As you turn on ESPN and any other sports highlight show in the country, you're guaranteed to see Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver Jerome Simpson doing a complete 360 flip over the DB and landing on his feet in the end zone, sticking the landing, and everybody's saying, one of the great NFL highlights of all time. Imagine how the folks who produce those shows have been running that highlight felt late this week when Jerome Simpson was finally indicted on trafficking marijuana charges in Cincinnati. And what strikes me is the circumstances of the case have not changed. His girlfriend received a package including 2.5 pounds of marijuana. Simpson allowed authorities to come in and search the house. They found another 6 pounds of pot. And yet it took him 4 months to figure out that he might have been dealing marijuana. Is it suspicious to anybody besides me that this indictment came down the week after the Cincinnati Bengals were eliminated from the playoffs? I don't want to suggest that he got any special treatment, but I kept asking myself as I saw the film, gee, whatever happened to that? Well, apparently, Wayne, the circumstances of the case have never changed. He's got a big problem on his hands because this indictment comes with a penalty of 1 to 5 years in prison. Now, innocent until proven guilty. But the marijuana was in his house. The package was accepted. We may not be seeing Jerome Simpson doing flips again for a while.
Oh, we'll see that flip forever, Hub. I can guarantee you that. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Giants and Patriots Radio Networks. Randy Meyer is our producer-engineer. Pro Football Weekly originates in the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Enjoy the championship games. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week with another edition of Pro Football Weekly.